Welcome to Research Reframed, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on research, insights, and data science. I'm your host, Jasmina Saleh, Director of Thought Leadership at National Research Group. We're a global insights consultancy at the intersection of content, culture, and technology. And in each episode, we dive deep into the trends, tools, and tensions that are shaping the future of the research industry. Today, we're unpacking one of NRG's specialties, franchises. They are a vital part of today's entertainment landscape, spanning different screens and formats, from the biggest screen in the cinema through to gaming and fueling fandom on socials and online. But recently, we've noticed a big shift. While franchises once relied on breadth and that four-quadrant appeal, we're now seeing a shift towards high fandom niches. Smaller communities like those in gaming, or a personal favorite of mine, anime. To talk us through this shift and why this is happening, we've got two in-house experts joining me today. Matt Blong, our tracking SVP and film specialist for the episode, and Colin Lervik, EVP of our gaming team. Hi, both. It is a pleasure having you with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, very happy to be here.
Exciting. All right. So before we get stuck into the shifting franchise ecosystem, could you briefly introduce yourselves to our listeners? Who are you and what do you both do at NRG?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Matt Blong. I'm SVP on our Trends and Futures team. I look after all of our syndicated entertainment tracking products. So we've got a theatrical tracking product, a streaming and linear tracking product, and then what we're really going to focus on today, which is our franchise IQ product, tracking brand health around the world for entertainment franchises across all verticals. I think I've been at NRG over 16 years, and my background is really focused in theatrical and more recently in the streaming and expanding into the gaming space.
How about you, Colin? Go ahead.
Yep. And I'm Colin Lervik. I lead our gaming and entertainment platforms practices. So work very closely with our teams and clients in those industries. I haven't been at NRG as long, but still almost 6 years now. Prior to that, I've been in and out of the games industry for most of my career and with entertainment clients as well.
So yeah, folks, if that doesn't give away that Colin's our gaming expert, then I don't know what will. All right, with introductions out of the way, let's start at the beginning, which is what is happening to franchises? How is the definition of a franchise evolving in our media landscape? And to be honest, guys, what does IP even truly mean in 2026?
I mean, from my point of view, the definition of a franchise maybe hasn't fundamentally changed, but I think it's really expanding. And we're seeing that, especially in the areas that I focus on, in the box office and in streaming. I think traditionally, producers or people looking to adapt pieces of IP, we're looking for those sort of big, broad, four-quadrant pieces of IP. Things were universally relatable, simple, easy to explain, things that traveled across the globe, and really things with strong name recognition, right? The epitome of that is really the superhero genre, you know, something that is not particularly complex. There's clearly good guys and bad guys, broadly appealing, well-known characters, et cetera. But what I think we're seeing over the past maybe 2 years is coming out of a period of superhero dominance, right? At least, again, at the box office where I'm really focused on. So some of the stats that I've seen recently are, you know, looking back to 2016, if you look at the period from 2016 to 2023, on average, about 22% of the box office was made up of superhero films, the domestic box office. Over the last 2 years, 2024, 2025, that's been basically cut in half. So superhero films are down to about 10 to 12% of the box office. So I think that really speaks to, you know, their dominance eroding. Now, some of that's slate dependent. We've had fewer superhero movies releasing in theaters, and the quality of those maybe hasn't been to the same degree as what we were seeing earlier in the decade. And this trend will be put to the test in 2026. We've got movies from two of the biggest superhero franchises coming out with an Avengers movie and a Spider-Man movie. So I'm not sure that I'm ready to like say that we're in a post-superhero world yet, but certainly their dominance has been diminishing somewhat. But franchises as a whole remain, you know, a core part of our entertainment diet. So I think what we're seeing is just more diversification in terms of what a franchise is or what producers are looking to adapt.
You mentioned expansion, diversification, and video games is a great example of that. So Colin, what are you seeing in that space as well?
Same sort of idea. I think it's undeniable. There's no question that gaming adaptations, anime, are becoming a source of consistent commercial success. It is fascinating, though, to start thinking about the reasons why. Like Matt was saying, I think traditionally, if you think about what you want to do to build a franchise, you're starting with that broad appeal and then adding depth to it over time. It seems like now it's flipped where you're working with IP that already have quite a lot of depth built into them. Games, anime too, for that matter, sort of defined by that, right? They have rich lore and world building built into them, so have a very highly engaged audience to begin with. There's assumptions about what they are and an interest in them, culturally speaking, at least within some circles. So you're just starting from a fundamentally different place, and you know, which comes with its own challenges, but clearly is proving to be successful. So yeah, no question, there's something going on here.
So we've covered the what's, what you're both seeing and how franchises are evolving, but can we talk about the why? Why is this happening in your opinions?
I think some of it is due to the fragmentation of media, right? If we're not all experiencing the same type of media, then awareness becomes maybe less of an indicator of success than engagement, as Colin was speaking to. I think we're seeing sort of that engagement over awareness, right? Social media, I think, is driving that, right? There's these fan-driven communities on places like BookTok or Reddit that are really demonstrating a depth of engagement with a certain audience. It's something we talk about in the theatrical world a lot around, for a film, you'd rather be red hot with an audience than lukewarm with everyone, right? So finding those IP that are red hot, that have demonstrated their ability to connect with an audience in a deep way, and then bringing that to the mass media, right? So adapting that into a streaming show or movie or a theatrical property is, I think, what we're seeing. And there's just also fewer types of content that haven't yet been adapted, right? How many times can we retread the same franchises over and over? We're looking for what's new, what's resonating with younger audiences. And that's where video games and anime, I think, are really two of the key drivers of future franchise success.
People we know are discovering content and deciding what they're going to watch or play or engage with differently than they used to. That affects everybody. There's something about the way that social media operates and algorithms and all that, where essentially now you have the premium on engagement rather than the traditional premium on awareness. The idea of maybe starting with something that has 50% Gen Pop awareness, nobody would have thought to do that before. But now you can look at something that maybe has that, let's say, middling level of awareness, but very high levels of engagement. And that's where you get organic pickup, people talking about it. Now it spreads that way naturally. And then you can see it through that engagement, you're creating new touch points for that franchise and new channels, and the awareness goes up. People are hearing about it from other people rather than just hearing about it from, let's say, the studio or the rights holder. People also have a lot of abundance and choice available to them. It may be that it used to just have more time to create content for your franchise, but now as soon as someone decides they're interested, they're looking to go deep quickly, and you want to have those things there available for them. And it's just hard to do that with something that maybe doesn't have that depth already. So animes, gaming IP, things that have so much richness built into them gives you a ton to work with, you know, to be able to give people opportunities to engage right away when they want to.
I think another key point that, you know, we all touched on in a separate conversation off the back of social media in particular, but also streaming, is algorithms. Can you guys talk to that a little bit as well?
People talk a lot about fandom. You know, that's a buzzword that gets thrown around, but I think is an important one. Not every algorithm works the same, but obviously they put a premium on engagement, whether that is liking it or sharing it, doing something of that nature. So if you think about what you as a user, any of us, are likely to click on, it's not just the thing we're aware of. It's not just the thing we've seen before. It's the thing that we are actually passionate about. You know, oh, I love this thing. It may be that the people you're starting with, who are the, let's say, seed audience, to use that terminology for a franchise, is smaller, but they're a passionate group. So when they see something, they start engaging with it. Engagement causes prioritization in the algorithm. Now more people are seeing it. What's this, you know, that everyone's interested in. So I think because of the nature in which that works, it puts that premium on things that people are passionate about, things that people want to participate in to some degree. That almost becomes the more effective pathway now to drive awareness than just trying to do, let's say, top of funnel strategies like a TV ad or something of that nature.
And it gives us, to your point, new metrics to understand what can correlate to future success, right? So engagement over awareness, that we can measure impressions or the way people engage with certain types of content, is something that we didn't have in the past before these algorithmic properties. I do think that it's fundamentally changing the way we think about how do we identify the IP of the future, not just based on awareness, but based on what people are actively engaging with.
I was absolutely a victim, if you will, of becoming a fan of Jujutsu Kaisen in this way. I saw it on TikTok first, and I was like, what is this? This looks amazing. And then started watching it, and now huge fan, you know, so speaks to that. Another thing I'd love you guys to talk about is legacy, nostalgia. These are things that are obviously driving certain perhaps lapsed fans back, or people who are now creators in that space that played certain games or loved certain IP and have them engaging in these new versions of it, essentially. So I'd love to touch on this, the nostalgia point.
I think nostalgia has always been an ingredient for franchise adaptations. It's always something that's played. But I think especially with the younger audiences, Gen Z and even Gen Alpha, now we're seeing that nostalgia curve shorten. I think about things like Gentle Minions a couple of years ago that was really driven by Gen Z nostalgia that drove wild success for a movie, even though it had only been, you know, less than a decade, but they felt nostalgia around it. Or the Disney adaptation strategy of, we're adapting all of our animated films into live action so you can experience it in a new way as you're growing older. So that nostalgia remains a core function of adapting IP. But I think we've got a live action Moana movie coming out next year. And the last movie was less than a decade ago. So I think nostalgia is a core component, but actually is driving engagement and viewership for younger audiences, maybe more than it had in the past.
Yeah. And my mind goes to that same idea before of how do you locate something that you know there's going to be passion around. And nostalgia is a great way to do that. So yeah, what the very idea of what qualifies as being nostalgic, like Matt was saying, is changing. But I think even in the traditional sense of the definition, yeah, you also have more and more creators of content of various types who came up just in a generation where they were consuming maybe what some of these more traditionally niche content types. And so for them, that type of content is nostalgic, and for their audiences too.
I think it's also an essential ingredient for like family-based content, right? I know Colin and I are both fathers, and you know, something like Mario, right? You make a movie for kids, but it resonates with adults who used to play the games. So having that nostalgia factor when you're focusing on kid-based content, but you want to bring the parents along or have the parents excited to show their kids about something they experienced when they were young, I think is really an important ingredient as well. The execution ultimately matters, right? We can have all these ingredients going in, but how you execute on the vision, but having that authentic feel, that an adaptation feels like it's for the fans, and you bring them along and make them part of the process and build that word of mouth with them. So the execution matters as much as having the right ingredients going in.
Again, great segue, because now let's dig into some more specific examples of this effect where IP has moved from niche into the mainstream and has ideally been successful. Colin, maybe you want to start first with like video games in particular, and then maybe we can shift to Matt on more of the film side of things.
Yeah, there's a number of good examples. I think the ones that it's timely because the second season of Fallout here is coming shortly. The Last of Us, Fallout, two standout examples, different platforms, but essentially achieve something similar, where you start with franchises that are maybe 50 to 60% awareness in terms of total gen pop entertainment consumer, but are very high passion among those who are aware. And you take them and you figure out how to extend them into this new category. You know, obviously there's this magic in doing it the right way, but in both cases, able to do it in a way that galvanized that existing core fan base to engage, thus driving buzz and awareness for people who had no idea what it was previously, and then expanded. So when you look at, I think The Last of Us is probably the most compelling example of this, perhaps because of the tropes and characters involved in that IP, but basically the release of that show single-handedly took that franchise from 50% gen pop awareness to more like 80%.
Question around the success of The Last of Us. Is that just because the marketing efforts were so strong, obviously, and that like bred that awareness, or was it also because like the Easter eggs that they maybe included staying like true to the original game? Like, what do you think were the ingredients that just worked really well for The Last of Us?
If you think about those sort of themes we talked about before, it checks off a lot of those boxes. Among people who had played the game and are aware of it, it's a beloved, always was a beloved franchise. That high engagement is certainly there. And so when people see an adaptation of it, again, you do it the right way, there's a strong desire for people to engage with it. And I think we are just at a state in terms of the abundance of content coming at people that just a large marketing budget, I don't think is enough to cut through that noise. I think you have to have that paired with a strong organic buzz. And that only happens if you have that hyper passionate, engaged group that you're building from, or at least that's a very effective way to do it.
Similarly, we see things like maybe previously inaccessible deep sci-fi content or fantasy content that might not have felt broadly appealing become more, have more mass appeal in the film or streaming space. I think of things like the Dune franchise, right? And we really saw that similar to what Colin said. Once Dune 1 released, it really increased the reach of that franchise. First time you could see it back on the big screen in over 30 years. But using sort of young, hot stars with Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya to really drive the accessibility for younger audiences. Or obviously Game of Thrones is a great example. The Witcher, I think, is a great example. And going back to my point about authenticity, having someone like Henry Cavill involved in that who could authentically advocate as, you know, a reader of the books and a player of the games and someone who felt was one of the fans and was going to have a faithful adaptation of the franchise, I thought was really meaningful in bringing that to life. So anime, I think, is also a great example of this. Something like One Piece getting put on Netflix and being the number one most watched show across the globe after it released. Avatar The Last Airbender finding a new life on streaming. So these sort of genres or subgenres that felt maybe only for fans have been really successful being brought to the mainstream media with intention and with producers and those involved being really specific around playing to the fans, but then making them broadly appealing. I would say the same for, as Colin was saying, with Last of Us and Fallout. Like, Last of Us just has amazing characters, right? And it's characters that if you don't play the game, you still they resonate with you when you watch them on screen. Or Fallout, about the world building in that franchise, and it's a world you want to live in and you want to experience. So they were really intentional about bringing those elements that made the games resonate to the screen.
Right, so we've covered what's happening and why, and we've given some great examples. Let's talk about the where. Where have you been able to identify this massive shift in approaches to franchises and IP?
I think we study this across NRG's products, from custom, you know, client commissioned projects to all of our trackers, but really the tool that we use the most to really, you know, be at the epicenter of these trends is Franchise IQ, our franchise health tracker. We sort of think of it as a holistic system to measure franchise value and promise across the entertainment universe. So what that means is it's a global brand health tracker for franchises that really emanate from all verticals, right? So we're looking at films, we're looking at series, we're looking at video games, books, stage plays, etc. And we're all tracking all of those franchises in the same survey to understand how consumers engage with them today and how they want to engage with them in the future, and really understanding sort of how perceptions of those franchises evolve as new touch points are put into the marketplace. So, you know, how do consumers, not just their awareness and fandom of Fallout, but how do they perceive the franchise as the series unfurls and how season two unfurls, et cetera. It's a global product. So we're live in the US every week among 13 to 64 year olds, but we're also in 11 international markets twice a year among that same sample. And then just last year, we started adding a Gen Alpha sample. So we're quarterly in the US among preschoolers up to 12 year olds, which gives us that ability to look at those sort of emerging trends. What are the franchises of the future for the next generation of consumers? So I think that's where we're really starting to study. Where should we be focused on adapting, and what mechanisms do we have to engage and meet the new consumer where they are? So we can talk about some of those. I think things like the social gaming brands we're really thinking a lot about, and I know other brands are, of how they interact with them, how they create content that meets those young consumers where they are, which is online and on those social video games like Roblox, Minecraft, and Fortnite. We've also developed within Franchise IQ a sort of methodology and a framework that we call power and popularity, which I think speaks to a lot of what we're talking about here today. So popularity being a more simple composite metric, making up awareness and fanship. So we sort of think about that as that broad reach of a franchise. What's the penetration of a franchise? What audience is responding to it? That's that sort of traditional sort of reach metric, right? But then we have power, which is more of a complex metric and speaks to the depth of engagement with a franchise. So this is a measure that takes into account whether consumers feel a franchise is relevant to them. Is it something that they're talking about with their friends? Is it something they view as being high quality or unique from others in its space? And ultimately, is it something that they're excited to engage with in the future? So power, you know, less about sizing the audience and more about speaking to the depth of engagement, which Colin and I have been talking about as sort of the measure of the future of how can we think about the franchises that are ripe for adaptations and further installments in the future.
One of the things that you guys touched on earlier, but especially Matt, now that you're saying you added a Gen Alpha sample, I'd be really curious to understand how is that audience, and even young Gen Z, to be honest, how is that audience specifically kind of influencing this shift in franchises today?
I think it speaks exactly to the types of genres that we've been talking about. Video games, these are heavy gamers, anime, these are franchises that Gen Z and Gen Alpha feel ownership of. I think that's something we look a lot at. Something like Minecraft, the success of the movie was really driven by a sense of ownership from this young audience. In fact, when we looked at like the skew of fanship, no franchise in our database in Franchise IQ had a sharper skew to Gen Z than Minecraft did. It was really a franchise they felt ownership of. They were ready to support. The execution lived up to what they needed, but it was a franchise that was for them and felt like something that they were ready to go support in a new medium. So I think these younger audiences are driving the rise of video games, the rise of anime. I think we think about things like book talk, seeing Gen Z females really engaging in materials that way. And we've got a couple examples of successful movies or shows like Summer I Turned Pretty, and we've got a couple of Colleen Hoover movies coming out recently. So these are areas where younger audiences are really leading the way and driving the success of the franchises of the future.
We need to try to figure out where these pockets of passion and participatory fandom, high engagement, where are those going to be? And one useful way to think about it, I think, if one frame is which franchises, regardless of the channel that they're in, are the best at something. Even just thinking through some of these examples, I know a lot of them have come from, let's say, gaming, but doesn't anime, we were talking about books, there's other sources. They don't have necessarily a lot in common with each other. The Last of Us is not like Fallout. Fallout is not like League of Legends. These are fundamentally different types of games, but and Minecraft, not to mention, is nothing like any of those games either. But what they all tend to share is that they're one of the best, if not the best, at the quality or attribute that they do have. So The Last of Us is one of the best storytelling games, maybe of all time. A passionate fan might tell you that. Obviously a great story. A great story that transcends. I mean, it's a point of passion. That's why people are so invested in that franchise historically. That works, you know. Fallout, not known necessarily for a story, was always much more about rich world building and the setting and the tone and the vibe. And that's something that works in that. Pre-Minecraft movie coming out, we're not sure. Okay, so it's world building or story. Is it this? Which one of those two is it? Turns out could be neither of those. It could be social engagement. Could be a community comes together and wants to create within that experience. And that is also something you can tap into and translate. So it's these pockets of passion that can specifically refer to a type of franchise that you're pursuing, which are the best at these different qualities. But I also, you mentioned Gen Alpha, I think it's the same is true for audiences. You don't necessarily need every audience to be interested in something in order for it to work, as long as the audiences you're focused on are truly deeply passionate about it. Obviously, the Gen Alpha connection to Minecraft, there's a few stronger connections between a franchise and a specific audience than that. And you can, you know, you can see what the film did.
It feels like the word of the day is specificity. It's like the niches, but also within those niches, understanding exactly, as you said, Colin, like what are those unique strengths? So Matt, you mentioned earlier these two key metrics in franchise IQ, power and popularity. So my question is, and I mean, Colin, you touched on this just now, but I'd be curious to kind of zoom in on those pockets of passion a little bit more, but how do gaming franchises differ from film franchises when it comes specifically to those two metrics, to power versus popularity? Does that fan depth look different for those two?
Yeah, I think there's certainly variation, right? Like I don't want to be as reductive as all video games look like this and all movies look like this, but it tends to be that we see movies that have already, you know, had theatrical releases or been broadly out there have wider popularity, so that that reach metric, they've reached more people, but oftentimes lower power, right? Lower depth of engagement, because you have a bigger audience that's exposed to it, but that audience might not be as engaged with it. Whereas video game brands and certainly anime brands that have yet to cross over to streaming or to theatrical tend to have smaller reaches, right? A smaller pocket of fans, but really deep engagement, at least the successful ones. So the ones we've spoken about, like the Fallouts and The Last of Us, they started before they were adapted with small popularity and really powerful or really strong power. And then as they've crossed over to streaming in both of those cases, they've grown that popularity and maintained the power. That's not a pattern that we see for all adaptations, but certainly those successful ones that we're highlighting are able to expand the reach that they have while maintaining that depth of engagement. Other franchises that maybe haven't had such successful adaptations grow their popularity, but either that can be fleeting and they then recede after they're sort of out of the public consciousness, or they grow their popularity, but their power, their depth of engagement sort of diminishes as they expand their reach to the mass media.
So I always like to close with a little future casting. And what, in your expert opinions, does all of this mean? Everything that we discussed today, power seems to be one of those big key metrics. Obviously, popularity is a big one, but Matt, you were kind of saying that's where, you know, that fan depth really lives, all of the different kind of key drivers we discussed of why this shift is happening. But what, in your expert opinions, does this all mean for the future of franchises? What are sort of your predictions, or dare I say, recommendations for those looking to make a high fandom first franchise that can really drive that engagement?
I'll say, you know, I think Colin put it really well, is like you can use our power metric in franchise IQ as that sort of prospecting metric. What are the franchises that I should be looking to adapt? But then the key thing is that execution of it, right? And we've talked about authenticity and really needing to play to the fans first. And, you know, we keep hitting on some of the same examples of Fallout and Last of Us, which did that excellently. Like Last of Us had Neil Druckmann, the producer, really out there doing podcasts explaining the choices that they made in the adaptation. Fallout, Todd Howard, the game director at Bethesda, is really heavily involved in the adaptation. The creator of Mario was heavily involved in the movie. So having those touch points that show the fan that their franchise that they really care about deeply is being taken care of in the way that they expect it to be is really crucial. And then I think the second part that we maybe hit on a little bit, but is really crucial for these younger audiences, is creating that element of participation, that active fandom, and giving them additional ways to engage with the franchise as you're adapting it. So whether that's putting out podcasts that kind of go behind the scenes and explaining some of the choices that were made, or, you know, with a video game adaptation, we've seen, you know, Fallout, you know, have sales for the video games, or release new DLC or skins that you can buy in The Witcher 3 to relate to the video game. So creating that sort of ecosystem, and it's not just the end result isn't just creating a successful adaptation, but how do you build on the ecosystem of the franchise? So putting out additional touch points, thinking about ways to engage the fans. Those fans are going to be that source of word of mouth. If they're disappointed, that's going to get out there, and that's going to be the variable that influences the public domain. So you've got to take care of them first and then find those elements. Again, as Colin said, it can be different, right? It can be world building and Fallout. It can be characters and story and Last of Us. But what are those elements that resonated with those fans? And then bring that to the mass general population and show them that this is a franchise that can be beloved for a variety of different ways.
We talk a lot about content ecosystems or franchise ecosystems. So if it used to be, you know, okay, we have a franchise portfolio, so we have this content work, let's make a spinoff in the same channel. Now we have a franchise spanning across channel or content types, potentially attached to one or multiple different platforms. There's a lot there in this ecosystem you start to imagine around any one given franchise. In general, I think everyone's trying to figure out how to perfect that, because if you imagine, you know, what's the effect of making, let's say, using an adaptation to drive awareness for what was previously a niche, high passion franchise. Great. Now we've had success. We've drove awareness for it. There are still potential barriers within our ecosystem, or actions or things we're expecting new fans coming in to want to participate and do that. Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't have those behaviors. A really simple example of that would be, okay, I watched a film based on a game. Am I then going to go play the game? Maybe, maybe not. I have to buy the right device. I have to get the right platform. And I also have to decide that that's a behavior I want to engage with. So that's a pretty prominent example. Game publishers are certainly thinking about that are participating in this kind of strategy. But I think it's also bigger to start thinking about social games, live service titles, anything, anime. It's like, it's a hard thing to do because you're trying to sequence together different types of content to work together with different release times across different channels again, and figure out the platform strategy of it all too. So I just see a lot of questions there to start to solve and try to figure out how to get a little bit more intelligent and thoughtful about, now that we know this kind of thing can work. And I think it enables the ability to start planning ahead for some of those things and figure out how to make those decisions.
So I think it's fair to say, watch this space. Okay, both. This has been an amazing discussion today. I just want to thank you both so much for coming on, and I hope you also enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. This was fun.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you very much for having us.
Research Reframed is produced by National Research Group, a global insights consultancy at the intersection of content, culture, and technology. Thanks for listening, and keep your ears perked for upcoming episodes where we'll dig into everything from AI methodologies to brand tracking myths to the future of qual. We'll see you next time.